Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the 10% Gameplay Podcast. In this episode, I make a damn fool of myself, ramble a little bit, and talk about a lot of various topics from gaming disorder to Black Panther and Altered Carbon, ICP, and even Jake Paul for some reason. There will be spoilers for Black Panther in this episode, but the rest should be fairly spoiler-free. You have been warned, and enjoy the episode.
You couldn't hit your own ball bag with your own wrinkled cock.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 10% Gameplay Podcast. Today, we have a pretty lengthy episode, maybe. I'm going to try to cram this all into 1 hour. We'll see how well I do. We're going to be talking about... So some of these are requested. Just keep in mind that some of these were requested by people. We're going to be talking about Jake Paul. We're going to be talking about ICP. We're going to be talking about internet gaming disorder. And then we're also going to talk about Black Panther. And specifically kind of skim over this article here, the tragedy of Eric Killmonger. And my thoughts on it. I thought it was a really good read. We are going to talk about Altered Carbon. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Altered Carbon, but it's going to be more me coming from getting you to watch it, so there's not going to be any spoilers if you're worried about that. We are going to talk about Full Metal Alchemist, and technically it has no spoilers because I can go over why it doesn't work without saying any spoilers. My throat's itchy today, so that's real good for a podcast. And we are also going to discuss the current state of DC and their movies and their extended universe and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of interaction that will be allowed here. It's just going to be up to me to make sure I don't alienate people who listen to the audio version. So I'm going to do my best. We might watch a trailer or two. So if you're listening to this on audio, I apologize in advance for that. And then the fact that we're going to watch a trailer will probably mean that this video will get flagged and demonetized on YouTube. Not like I can monetize anyways, but so the people who requested some of the first stuff are not here yet, but I do know that some anime fans are in the chat already. So has anyone other than myself watched the Full Metal Alchemist live-action Netflix adaptation yet? Or am I the only one and I'm just going to either ruin your day or save your week, depending on your thoughts? Let's go ahead and make sure we get this spread out here. Okay. Yes, all right. So Socks and Boxer says he didn't know it was on Netflix already. So by the time you're hearing this, yes, it is on Netflix. I am also behind, I'm also behind on putting out the audio episodes, so I apologize for that. I apologize to Misuki. I haven't put out her episode. And what's funny about that is I actually made the intro a lot sooner than I usually do, but I just haven't spliced them together. So I like was more proactive for about 2 minutes, and then that was about it. So, talking about Full Metal Alchemist. So, first of all, I would not compare it to Death Note, so it's not going to be that harsh of a conversation here. Death Note was a complete, I mean, you could say whitewashing to simple, make things simple. I just like to call it an Americanization. I don't even know if that's like proper way to say things, but that's just kind of how I do it. Like, you know, American remakes of One Missed Call, which was awful. Old Boy, which wasn't awful, but it was not good. So on and so forth. So the live action Full Metal Alchemist actually is a... it's not American. It's in Japanese, I believe. I probably should have looked further into the region that it specifically came out of before this, but of course I didn't. So, I don't think it's fair to compare it to Death Note, but I'm here to tell you why it doesn't work. So, no, I haven't covered the Juggalo material yet. We got Juggalo God in the chat for those listening, and he's ready for some of that material. We're talking about Full Metal Alchemist right now. So, I'm just going to go over some quick points of why I think it doesn't work. I guess I should pull up Full Metal Alchemist. We are going to get to this as well, though. So this is what we're talking... Wow, I cannot spell. This is what we're talking about right now. So here's my reaction to the Full Metal Alchemist is Beautiful But Hollow review. Review by Nerdist. Okay, then. I don't know if I believe that. Anyways... Listen to me. Don't listen to whatever Nerdist is saying. All right. Here's my points. So, first of all, I don't think Full Metal Alchemist is a anime that should have ever been brought to live action. I just think there's way too many anime-style effects and things like that happen. I think it was, from the start, a really, really bold kind of attempt to try to do a live-action Full Metal Alchemist. I mean, you got alchemists. You got people doing all crazy type of, like, on-the-spot science, like, chemistry, alchemy. I don't know another way to say alchemy. You know, bringing up freaking boulder monsters, you know, mending stuff on the fly. Like, it was something that was going to take a huge budget to pull off. So that brings me into my next point. I don't think they had the money. I think it's very obvious that they didn't have the money to go all out with these special effects. Now, they're not terrible. Much like a lot of this movie, the things within it are not terrible. It's just not good enough. And when it's a remake of something that already exists, if it's not good enough or it's not better... or it's not like a revitalization, then what the hell's the point? My other point on why it doesn't work is in anime, age is kind of different. So in Full Metal Alchemist, I researched this to make sure, and the consensus is for most of the series, they're around the age of 15. I believe Ed is a year younger, and I might have got that backwards, but so 14, 15. This guy is obviously not 15 years old. I mean, we could probably look it up. Let's see, Full Metal Alchemist live action. Let's find out how old he is. All right. I think I did say it backwards. So this guy is 24. So almost 10 years older than the character he's supposed to be playing. And I feel like that just makes it feel a lot different and kind of takes you out of the experience. I gotta get my character names right down here because I am getting them mixed up. So a little backstory. Yeah, so Ed and Al. Al's voice is not good. I'll just say that. Those of you who have watched Full Metal Alchemist know that Al's voice is kind of like, you can tell how young he is, and it's just kind of, I don't know. It was something that I liked about the show, was Al's voice, and just how it was kind of this really soft, like you could totally tell it was a child in a huge metal suit. So those are two of my main reasons it doesn't work. And the third is pretty typical. You smashed almost an entire anime into one movie. I don't know why they keep doing this. Probably because this is a one and done. We gotta make the movie, and if it succeeds, good. If it doesn't, at least we made the movie. I don't know. So those are my reasons why I don't think it works. And I wouldn't waste your time watching it unless you have nothing else to watch. Granted, it is free to watch Full Metal Alchemist live action on Netflix, so you don't lose too much except for your time. If anyone has anything to chime in the chat, I'm open to hearing it. So, Socks and Boxers, I would have loved if they got the actress who does Ed's voice in the anime to play him too. Right? Yeah, I don't know. Like, a lot of people complained about her hair color too, Winnie. And, I mean, that wasn't a huge issue for me. But, I mean, his hair color was freaking Ed's hair color. I gotta remember that I gotta speak this out. Ed's hair color is pretty close to the anime, but it just looks so wrong for some reason. I don't know. Anyways, those are my gripes with Full Metal Alchemist. In the end, it's not terrible. It's not as bad as Death Note. The acting isn't horrible. Most of the story is there, but some of your favorite characters are missing. A lot of people are upset that this certain character is not in it, which is Armstrong. So if you want to watch the Full Metal Alchemist live action movie to see Armstrong, you'll be severely disappointed because he's not in it. All right. No Armstrong. Yeah, chat's already exploding with that. So, to move on from that, let's see here. We got Juggalo God here. We don't have Sean Spicer, the Juggalo himself. So we're gonna talk about internet gaming disorder for a second. Chat is still upset about no Armstrong, and I very much agree with you, Socks and Boxers. Why even bother? That's pretty much my review of the Full Metal Alchemist live-action movie. Why even bother? I feel like maybe a live-action miniseries would have been better, and if they would have put more money into it, because, I don't know. Anyways, alright, so internet gaming disorder. So, just to give you a gist of this article, it's talking about how internet gaming disorder is a condition for further study. So it's not an official disorder yet, but they're looking into it being a disorder. It does not include internet-based gambling. They researched that in a different criteria. It is very much more prevalent in Asian countries. Here are the lists, or the bullet points of what they think makes up internet gaming disorder. So, repetitive use of internet-based games, often with other players, that lead to significant issues with functioning. Five of the following criteria must be met within 1 year. So if you have five of these issues, I guess you have this disorder, according to a study that they're bringing up. So one, preoccupation or obsession with internet games. Two, withdrawal symptoms when not playing internet games. Three, A buildup of tolerance, more time needs to be spent playing the games. I don't really understand that. I've never had that situation with me. If anything, the older I've got and the more video games I've played, I play less. But maybe some people build up a tolerance for video games. I don't know. Tell me what you think. The person has tried to stop or curb playing internet games, but has failed to do so. The person has had a loss of interest in other life activities, such as hobbies. A person has had continued overuse of internet games with the knowledge of how much it impacts a person's life. The person lied to others about his or her internet game usage. The person uses internet games to relieve anxiety or guilt. It's a way to escape. I feel like that one's kind of unfair. The person has lost or put at risk an opportunity or relationship because of internet games. So feel free to start telling me what you think about that. My thoughts on internet gaming disorder. It said here, loss of interest, such as hobbies. Is gaming not its own hobby? So maybe that just becomes your main hobby. I know some people have, three, four, five hobbies, but some people might have, one or two hobbies. There's people who crochet, and that's their end-all, be-all main hobby. So the other thing that I would say is I would compare internet gaming to watching movies a ton. Being obsessed with sports and watching sports a ton, or fantasy sports, or things like that. Blah, blah, blah. Is it not the same? I would also counter that there are countless studies that show gaming to be really good. They say that surgeons that play video games for 3 hours a week at least experience 37% less errors. That is a surgeon having errors 37% less than someone who doesn't play video games. That's a fucking ton of percent. Let's see, what else did I say? Oh, okay, yeah, so to wrap it up, I would say it just comes down to all things, come in moderation. You should, watch movies in moderation. If you're for some reason watching movies to the fact where you're not sleeping and you're up all hours of the night just watching movies, is that not the same? If you do too many drugs, too much alcohol, you masturbate too much, like, I feel like that is just people with an addictive personality might have this, but how is it the base issue, I guess, is what I'm saying. Juggalo God says, I think it seems less harmful right now, but VR has the possibility to turn into something legitimately dangerous. Yeah, I mean, there's been issues with people playing WoW or certain things, and, They forget about their life, they get divorces, they get in bad health, so on and so forth. But I feel like a lot of those things also happen with other things that people do. Adrenaline junkies, they do so many things that it freaking comes back to bite them. I think it's not video games, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's not video games that are the issue, and I feel like a lot of people point at video games to blame on things. Part of the reason why, I think, is because it's newer. Like, video games have really only been around since the 90s, and honestly, in the past 10 years, they've just started gaining, real, real mainstream success and, popularity. WoW has only been a game for 11 or 12 years. So, I don't know. Tell me what you guys think. you think it's a disorder, so on and so forth. So let's see here. In the chat, a lot of people are critical of those behaviors too. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is it's just wrapped around in addictive behaviors. It's not just video games, I guess, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm just trying to say that, like, it's a whole issue of certain personalities, and I think it's unfair to say to someone that it's bad to use video games as an escape. I think if you're using video games as an escape to the point where you're not living life, then you need to see a therapist. I think that's, honestly, that's what I think I'm going to say. That's how I'm going to put it, is if you do anything to the point where these things happen, where you have withdrawals, where you have an obsession, where you're seeking, you know, escape from reality, I think you have an underlying issue that you need to seek help for. Yeah, so Juggalo God does point out that you have to have 5 of these criteria within a year to be diagnosed with this internet gaming disorder. I'm kind of interested in why it's internet gaming disorder, but I guess maybe that's where we start to see it the most, is because if you're on the internet, you have everything you need. I mean, you have friendships you can make, you have entertainment, you don't really need to leave. So I guess that's why internet gaming is more of an issue. Hello, Spice, Sean Spicer, we're getting to your topic soon. Yeah, I don't know. I just hate seeing things as a scapegoat. I think we need to see the underlying issue. That's my opinion. Yeah, so Socks and Boxers says, I think this sounds inflammatory because of the name, but it sounds to me like they're just expanding the definition of addiction to include video games. Which, I can agree with that. I mean, I don't feel defensive towards this. I know personally I don't have an issue with gaming. If I'm not streaming, I'm hardly even gaming. I've never really had any of these issues. I feel like the relieving anxiety or guilt, a way to escape, is kind of unfair, like I said before. I think as long as you're not coupling it with all these other things, like doing it too much, I think it's perfectly reasonable to use certain things as an escape. Some people use traveling as an escape, you know. Some people use movies, books, so forth. It just gets to the point of moderation, I guess. You'll hear that throughout your whole life. Oh, you know, you can eat candy in moderation, blah, 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 so forth. So, very interesting topic. I'd like to know, anyone listening to the audio version, what you guys think. We're going to jump into 2 quick topics here to get them off my chest, and we never have to talk about them again. So, first of all, starting with Jake Paul. So, Sean Spicer sent me just the Wikipedia article of Jake Paul. I didn't read it because it wasn't something that was concise, and, you know, it didn't pose a question. So, I'm going to pose a question about Jake Paul based off of my own idea. So let's bring up a picture of Jake Paul for those of you who don't know. And that way, if anyone jumps in, they know what we're talking about. So, Jake Paul. My current... Oh, that's a terrible picture. My current philosophy, or not philosophy, I guess question about Jake Paul is... Is he going to have a downfall like his brother? And now when I say downfall, I just mean, you know, media controversy even more than he's already had. So, you know what? Let's bring up news on Jake Paul instead of a picture. So Jake Paul has had his form of controversy. He's, you know, pissed off his neighbors. He's, you know, been seen on the freaking news being annoying. He did the thing where he decided to put out a video, something about losing his virginity with his girlfriend, with a very questionable thumbnail, that so far is not as bad as what Logan Paul has done. Just to touch on what Logan Paul has done for those people who don't know, filmed a dead body, laughed about it, put it in the thumbnail, put the video up, had a whole apology, thought he was, well, I didn't think he was going to turn around, but I hoped that he was going to turn around. He came back with a video that was obviously pandering, but I felt like for his audience, it was kind of an important video because they take what he says at face value. But then he went backwards and he made fun of his issue. He made fun of everything. He spat in the face of everyone who thought he was going to change, and he was tasing dead animals. He got his ads removed. He was on probation. He has his ads back now, but anyways, this poses the question. Do we think that Jake Paul is going to learn from his brother, or is he going to fall down in the same, you know, footpath? That was a stupid way of saying it. YouTube is getting more strict. They're going to start putting creators on suspensions if things like this continue to happen. They want to cut down on drama. We'll see how they do it. So that's really just my question. Do you think that he's going to have as much controversy? Also, do you think that it's just benefiting them? Logan Paul saw a rise in subs when he went through his whole controversy. He doesn't need the ad revenue from YouTube as well. He's making millions off his merch. I mean, to be honest, I know that Logan Paul has enough money to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on marketing. Like, he's got money. It's not hurting him. That's my quick touch on Jake Paul. Juggalo God says, is there anything to even learn from his brother? He got suspended for a bit and now is right back where he started. I wouldn't be surprised if he has even more subs now. Yeah, so that kind of touches on a bigger issue. So YouTube, they obviously want to make money. They're making tons of money off of these dramatic events. They had their most streamed event on the YouTube platform when it was a boxing match between KSI and some other guy. And now KSI has challenged Logan Paul, and Logan Paul has accepted. So if the first one with some guy I've never heard about was the biggest watched stream on YouTube, what is Logan Paul and KSI going to be? So YouTube, of course, has to be careful because they say that they don't want drama. But if they shut that down, they're going to lose thousands of dollars. So do they be a brand that everyone respects, or do they be a brand that makes a ton of money and doesn't care? Like, you never know. Yeah, Juggalo God says, I guess if there's anything to learn, it's you can do whatever you want. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just glad that supposedly Logan Paul's suspension states that he cannot be seen on trending and blah, 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 and stuff like that. You will not be alerted of his videos unless you're subbed to him. And he doesn't have Google preferred ads. And he still is affected by that. So that's the only good news for us that like YouTube and like to use it. But he is not hurt. In my eyes, he is not hurt. So the other issue people raise is who's going to bring out a platform that competes against YouTube. I think in this current market, it's probably too hard. But we'll try not to count anybody out. All right. So I think I forgot to pull up the article. But on to ICP. Oh, here we go. Here's the article I was sent about ICP. Insane Clown Posse and God Created Controversy. So I didn't have to read too much of this article, honestly. I wasn't too surprised. I don't know why we're talking about it other than a troll, so I'll try to make this part really quick because it's not very relevant, but it's kind of funny. So pretty much this article is stating that ICP came out and said that they are pretty much Christian and a lot of their themes revolve around God, and now they're coming out singing about God. I've never been a juggalo. I grew up in West Valley, so I guess that's maybe how I have this knowledge. I'm not surprised. I knew this in high school. Like, I always knew that the Dark Carnival, quotes, air quotes, was a metaphor or manifestation of heaven. And I feel like a lot of people knew that. So I don't know why this is shocking so many juggalos that ICP is coming out confirming it. I've heard stories about how ICP grew up in, you know, suburbs. They always grew up Christian. And like I said, the Dark Carnival is just a metaphor for heaven. So I am not surprised. I don't know why you guys are surprised. But on to the next topic. All right. Thanks, Sean Spicer, for those two thrilling topics that we just talked about. So, I feel like this is just, like, blasting through. I feel like this episode has, like, not dropped a beat, and I hope you guys agree. I hope it doesn't just sound like I'm rambling. This is kind of a hard episode to do because I don't have anyone to bounce off of and back and forth, and I also have to be careful about how I interact with chat so I don't leave you audio listeners out. Which we do have audio listeners, so if you've never watched the stream but you listen to the podcast, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for that. And the people who do both, thank you doubly. Thank you two times. You are going out of your way. On to the next. I think this is probably the most interesting topic of the podcast. I think it's probably the most controversial. Thank you, Juggalo God, for submitting this article. I really enjoyed the read, and I actually agree with this article. So if you guys want to read it later on, I'm going to throw the link in chat right now. And I will put it in the YouTube video. I'll share it in Discord or whatever. I've retweeted it on Twitter if you want to read it. I think it's a good read. So, the article is titled "The Tragedy of Eric Killmonger." So I'm going to just preface this by saying I am not going to give enough credit to the article. There's a lot of themes that it touches on. Honestly, I'm probably not smart enough or qualified to go into all of it. So I'm just going to give you a generalization of some of the points of the article. So, there are a lot of people who see Killmonger as a, so to clarify, Eric Killmonger in the new movie Black Panther. That should have been obvious, but anyways. They see him as a hero. And this article disagrees with that to an extent. So, I'm going to throw out some quotes here that I agree with. I'm trying to think of how I go about stating, breaking down this article. I probably should have taken more time on it because it's a good think piece. So it's kind of talking about how Killmonger's stated purpose is to liberate black people all over the world, and how the movie has sparked a lively discussion over whether he is a bad guy to begin with. So, I would say that at certain moments, Killmonger kind of starts out as a hero in his ideologies. He just goes about them in the wrong way. And that's my overall opinion on Killmonger. So this quote right here from Killmonger I agree with. 2 billion people all over the world who look like us, whose lives are much harder, and Wakanda has the tools to liberate them all. Where was Wakanda? Boom. I agreed with that so much. So, you know, Killmonger, he's left without a dad, without a mom, you know, and he has this hatred for Wakanda. And it is their problem. They are the ones who created Killmonger. Let's see here. Yeah, I'm not going to give this article justice, so you have to read it. So let's see here. So that gets into breaking down what he says. So let's see. So in Killmonger's eyes, his goal is the liberation of black people, but that is not truly his goal. As Coogler makes clear in the text of the script and in Killmonger's interactions with other characters, like Magneto, another comic book character who is based off of historical trauma, Killmonger's goal is world domination. The sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire, Killmonger declares, echoing an old saying about the British Empire to drive the point home as clear as possible. So, like I said, I'm not giving the article credit, but pretty much the article is saying that Killmonger is not a hero, but establishing the kind of themes he's talking about, relating it to some more radical movements, things like that. and that's when T'Challa, Black Panther, you know, he challenges him and says, "You want to see us become just like the people you hate so much." So I'm gonna just say my thoughts on this article because I'm butchering it. I'd have to read the whole article for you to get it. So I agree with it. I think that Killmonger might have started with good intentions, but he ultimately went too far. So let's see here. And I feel like the biggest theme of showing this is in the movie, T'Challa recognizes that Killmonger is correct. Everything Killmonger is saying is not untrue. You know, there's all these people suffering. Wakanda is also, you know, responsible for his suffering. The difference between Black Panther and Eric Killmonger is Black Panther listens to what he's saying. He gets furious with his father. He gets furious with Wakanda. And he changes how they operate. And that's seen at the end of the movie. So instead of taking this ideology of, you know, everyone's our enemy, we're just going to smash them down, Wakanda's going to be the rulers, he sees it as, like, uplifting all the people that need help that Wakanda should have been helping. And Black Panther agrees with this in saying, you know what, he was right. Like, we could be doing so much. And that's why Eric Killmonger is kind of a great hero and a villain. He changes the mind of a hero who previously in the movie stated, you know, I think they have a quote in this article too, but pretty much at the start of the movie, Black Panther states, "What would you have Wakanda do? You know, we have this operating method we've done forever. If we expose ourselves to the world, then we'll put ourselves in danger, and we don't want to do that." By the end of the movie, Killmonger changes his mind. So I feel like I'm, like, really disjointed with this, but it's such a heavy topic that I, like I said, I feel like I'm not too qualified to speak on. But to Black Panther's credit, he's not denouncing all violence, and this article kind of states that, but he's not agreeing with violence for violence's sake. And that's kind of the huge difference there. When the movie first started, I kind of hated Black Panther, to tell you the truth. I was on the side of, why are you not helping these people? Why are you being a huge douche? You know, you have all this money. I agreed with those people. By the end of the movie, I was so surprised by how Black Panther turned it around that I also, like this article states, saw Killmonger for the villain he is, and Black Panther as the true hero. And I think that's how it was meant to be shown. The other question you could raise is, is it Killmonger's fault that he's such a villain? Like, you know, all the terrible things that happened to him. I think you're either on the side of he can't be blamed too much because of all the bad things, or you can't always blame what happened in the past for how you are now. Like, I've had terrible things happen in my life. I had a much different upbringing than I act now, and I'm different. I'm not comparing my life to terrible things happening, like my father being killed by the king of a secret nation. But I'm just saying, you know, which side do you fall on? Can he blame it? Not so forth. Juggalo God said, it's definitely a must read for anyone who has seen Black Panther and is familiar with the Black Panther Party. Yes, I agree. You know what I should have done is I should have marked specific parts in this article. I thought I'd be able to pick them out, but I didn't very well. So there's another good point in here is some people are comparing Killmonger to inner city gangsterism. And I agree with this article that that is very wrong. When the movie first started, I felt that it might have gone that way. But I see that that wasn't the point. The point wasn't, oh, these people are, you know, just being gangbangers. They're being thugs. The reason that Eric Killmonger's father was collecting weapons was for the same reason that Killmonger was. They thought they could help their people. And, you know, in the end, the movie shows that that wasn't the issue. That couldn't have fixed it. So this article says, Killmonger is not a product of the ghetto so much as he is a product of the American military-industrial complex. Here, too, the script is explicit. Noting Killmonger's technical background, he studied at MIT, his war record, tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and even Africa, where he acknowledges, I killed my own brothers and sisters on this continent. The CIA agent Everett Ross says of Killmonger, he's not a Wakandan, he's one of ours. Later observing that Killmonger's coup is what the US government trained him to do. The part of Killmonger that makes him a supervillain is not the part of him that is African. So I thought that was a really good point. And there's a lot of, like, rich history in the movie Black Panther that if you don't know, it just goes over your head. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know as much as I should about African history. And, you know, it makes you want to research it some more. Like this here, the history of the CIA in Africa is a history of suppression of democratic movements like the African National Congress, the backing of brutal dictators, and the opposition to racial equality in the name of anti-communism. So, like, I never knew of that history in Africa, and this, you know, brings it up. There's so many subtle tones of the history. I mean, not even subtle. It's subtle if you don't know them, I guess, but it's profound if you do. So Black Panther is a great movie. I agree with this article is what I'm trying to say. I know that was probably all over the place, but I feel like it was a good point. Seek out this article. If you don't see the link anywhere I post it, it's a article on The Atlantic, The Tragedy of Eric Killmonger. I feel like if you read it, you'll understand more of what I'm saying. I'm not just rambling. Socks and Boxer says, to be fair, that's the same shit the CIA has done around the world since like the 50s. Yeah, and I mean, that's a whole another conversation for another day about America's meddling in different issues and whatnot. I will say, the thing that brought home the entire freaking movie for me was the ending line by Killmonger. It was, it fucking, like, boom, nail driven through. And I feel like for a lot of people, that line went over their heads. This is what I think. One, people either didn't have any bearing on them at all because they don't care, they don't know, they don't recognize the history. Or two, it made them mad. And I feel like if it made them mad, fucking good. right? Like, so let's see. It it doesn't have the exact quote in here, but pretty much Black Panther. I told you this was going to be the only spoiler part because I wanted to talk about this. Black Panther pretty much tells him that he can save his life. And Eric Killmonger says, no, bury me at sea with, you know, my ancestors. And, like, just thinking about it, like, is a lot of emotion. So if you don't feel that emotion, I feel like you need to watch the movie again after, like, reading a bunch of history or something. Let's see. I don't think it goes over here, but he says that in a much better way. Like, he says a very good line at the end of the movie. So I guess in this article, they're talking about another article where it says, Killmonger will not appear in another movie. He does not get a second chance. His black life did not matter, even in a world of flying cars and miracle medicine. So that's a quote from another article that's kind of contradictory to this one. This article states, on the contrary, Killmonger's ascension and death is the event that catalyzes Wakanda's redemption from its greatest failure. And his death ensures that unlike Loki, unlike Thanos, unlike the Red Skull, or any other of Marvel's endless stables of the world, whatever, the pathos of his tragic end cannot be infinitely repeated as farce. His death not only matters, it is also why he matters more than all the rest of them. And that's exactly what I said at the end of the movie. I said, if they bring him back, that's so fucked up. Like, he died for a purpose. He stated the best line in the entire movie, and that's why his death matters, like this article states. Him and his death are the reason why Black Panther sees the light and makes the changes. So, whew, heavy topic. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I am not the most qualified person. I will be the first to admit I'm not a history buff. I don't know my shit well enough, but I really enjoyed the article. So, any last thoughts on that before we move on? We have two more topics left. I'll try to get through these ones faster. Thank you guys for being here on this episode. It's a test. You'll have to let me know what you think. So the next topic is we're just going to touch on Altered Carbon real quick. So I'm going to play you guys a trailer of Altered Carbon. If you haven't seen it, audio listeners, I guess you'll hear the trailer. But I'm not going to have any, there will be no spoilers in this talk of Altered Carbon. So if you haven't watched it yet, don't worry, there's going to be no spoilers.
Your body is not who you are. You shed it like a snake sheds its skin. We transfer the human consciousness between bodies to live eternal life.
How long have I been down?
250 years.
You are the property of Bancroft Industries. You've been provided with this body, which came equipped with military-grade neurochem and combat muscle memory.
So, I just want to say all the little futuristic shit is what I love. Ask you to bring me back into like, freaking neurochem, stronger bodies, freaking military-grade skin.
Did you solve a murder?
Flying cars. Oof. Colors.
This is the beginning.
Whoever murdered him must be found, or we're all in danger.
I'm gonna need access that you don't want to give. And I'm gonna find answers that you may only think you want.
Lots of holographics and VR stuff. Bringing it back to VR.
I can't trust anybody.
If you don't solve this quickly enough,
I'm gonna erase you.
I thought you'd be bigger. They made me bring all this back up.
It's rude.
There's more here than you're willing to see. Mystery needs to be solved.
All right, so I'm just going to end there because of what she just said. The mystery needs to be solved. So, just some quick points about Altered Carbon. I thought it was great, but I fucking love sci-fi. Anything that is futuristic, that has any new kind of concepts or gadgets, whatever, I'm all about. I can get lost in just the little nuances of, you know, the world. It has really good action, but if you just want high adrenaline action through the whole thing, might not be for you. It's actually more of a mystery than an action movie. And I also really liked that. It keeps you guessing. Is this what happened? Is this what happened? You slowly start to piece it together, and then you throw that out the window because something else crazy happens. It's just really good. It has good cinematography, good acting, and I feel like it's a different kind of sci-fi than we've seen. I could be wrong. I feel like Minority Report kind of has a mystery element, but anyways. I thought it was really good, worth a watch, free to watch on Netflix, so you don't have too much to lose. Another question I was going to pose is, you see all the time in futuristic movies that there's always a huge difference, right, between society. So there's like the people up here are like tons of money, tons of power, and they, you know, have super nice things. They have clones, they have robots, they have all this. And the bottom is even lower than we see today. It's like hyper realistic, I don't know, compared to now. Like, the bottom is like people strung out on drugs like a ton. Like, there's no chance for them. They're just stuck on the bottom. And my question is, are they always like that because we think the world is going to go that way, or it's just an exaggeration of how the world really is? I think maybe a little both. I think we've been in sci-fi movies kind of predicting the wage gap increasing, and now we're just living it, and we're continuing to predict it and continuing to live it. But that's another crazy concept. And it's really complex, and once again, I probably am not qualified to talk on it too much. So, if you have any thoughts on that, real quick, throw them in the chat. If you have anything else you want me to touch on before we end, please throw it in the chat, because we're coming here to the close. The last thing we're going to talk about are DC movies and the current state of the DC movie universe. Let's see here. I want the article with the title that I like. Here we go. So the newest news in the form of DC movies comes with Joss Whedon leaving the Batgirl movie. Quoted, "I really don't have a story." So I probably should have researched the trouble at DC a little more than I did before this, to be honest. But I'm just going to tell you my opinions on why I think they're having such a hard time from an outsider looking in. If you have any ideas or thoughts, feel free to chime in. Tell me what you think. First of all, I have a feeling that DC doesn't treat their directors and writers very well. That's just kind of how it seems from a lot of the articles we've seen released. A lot of, you know, directors moving around, directors dropping off, blah, 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 things like that. And I don't think it's, like, necessarily a complete, like, I don't think they're abusing the directors. I think, to me, what it sounds like from the complete and utterly outside is they don't trust their directors. For some reason, if we have to compare it to Marvel, which we will only compare it real quick, I feel like Marvel trusts their directors. They have the, you know, they have James Gunn, and they've trusted with him with Guardians of the Galaxy. It seems like he has a lot of creative control around Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, he pretty much built the soundtrack that, you know, played throughout the movie. He makes a lot of decisions on it. And, you know, as a director, if you have a lot of creative control, you probably are going to want to stay there more. They have the brothers. I just forgot their last name. The Russo brothers. They have the Russo brothers on a lot of Marvel projects, and I feel like they were allowed to take some risks. They were, you know, received a lot of creative control. So I think DC's problem is they don't trust their people. The other issue, I think, is they rushed things too much. I mean, if you compare how many movies that are actually in the lineage that took to get to Justice League, it's not very many. What, we had two movies? You had Man of Steel, if you can count Man of Steel, and then you had Batman vs. Superman, and then boom, Justice League. Well, I guess you had Wonder Woman, so I'm a little off there. How many movies were there before before the Avengers? Fuck, I can't even speak. So before the Avengers, I mean, this, I don't think Incredible Hulk really counts. So we'll say Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America. So, I mean, Marvel only had one more movie, but for some reason it just seemed more established. So, the other thing is, I feel like DC is doing it a little more disjointed, which I think can work out. I think Marvel needs to break off a little more, and that will get me more excited back into Marvel movies. DC, they're too disjointed right now, I think. You know, they released Suicide Squad completely separate. There were all these issues about how it's not related. It, you know, it doesn't exist in the other side of their movies. Batman vs. Superman, things like that. They had their TV shows, which were not related at all to the movies, so on and so forth. I just feel like there's no trust with DC, and they're just kind of disjointed. I'll be honest, I didn't bother seeing Justice League. I don't know what you guys think. I know the diehard DC fans really love Justice League. There's the whole freaking mustache removal controversy, which is just completely stupid. I don't know. Do I think DC can save it, though? I really think they can. I feel like we're going to see it start turning around when their solo movies start coming out. Wonder Woman was absolutely amazing. I have hopes for Aquaman. I have hopes for Flash. You know, if they make a Cyborg movie, I have hopes for that. But I just don't know. Right now, DC has a lot of groundwork to make up to get people that aren't diehard fans interested. The other downside is they're probably still making enough movie that it doesn't even matter. Like, Suicide Squad 2 is moving ahead. That movie got tanked and ragged on a whole bunch. Last I heard, there's no issues with it moving ahead. So, Will they learn and will they change? Maybe. Probably not. Who knows? So that actually ends all the topics we have here for today. We're right here at just about over an hour with the podcast episode. If you guys have any last questions or anything you want to throw out in the chat, just let me know and we'll touch on those real quick. Just want to thank you guys for coming here. This episode, of course, was kind of off the rails, kind of different than we do. We should be back next week with another interview, I think. If the one that I think I set up doesn't work out, I will find one. Did I schedule one? That is the question. Let's see. I don't know. I'll look into it. When I first started, I scheduled a bunch out, and then I stopped because I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep it going. So if you guys want the podcast to stay around, let me know. Let me know what you would change. Let me know what kind of episodes you would want to see, especially those people who only listen to the audio version. Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how you would like to see the podcast stay around. If you would like it to go away, I'm open to all thoughts. But that is the end of the podcast part. We just got to throw a raid now. No matter what, I always like to throw a raid, even if it's not going to be, you know, super big or anything like that. Still like to do it. So let's see. You know what? I'm going to throw a raid to something really random, and I don't know. We'll see how it works out. So if you guys don't have any last minute questions or topics or anything like that, then that is the end of the podcast, and I appreciate you guys for coming. I really want to meet the longtime listener that's like, fuck you, end this shit. Yeah, I don't know. Feedback is always nice because I have to pay $10 a month to keep this alive, and it is a lot of work for me to edit it and put it out. Hence why I haven't put out last week's episode on the audio version. I know I'm an asshole. So it's not ever going to be super amazingly great unless I am a streamer full time. Then I'll have more time to devote to it. But there are little things I could probably do to make it better. Feel free to shoot those suggestions to me at Twitter, in the Discord if you have the Discord, Facebook, Instagram, I don't care. Just find me and talk shit to me. Whatever. All right. Well, thank you guys again. Let's throw that raid.